Dr. Maple Go, and welcome to Doctor Not Otherwise Specified, also known as Dr. NOS. This podcast is to provide guidance for our junior doctors to navigate medical and non-medical careers. I hope all the doctors out there can get something out of this, whether they're specified or not. Kia pai tora.
Haramai to another episode of Dr. NOS. Today, I've got Dr. Lillian New. Originally hailing from Malaysia, Lillian moved to New Zealand aged 18 to pursue a medical degree at Otago Medical School. While training in rural medicine, she has spanned experience as a medical registrar and an anaesthetic registrar. She's enjoyed locuming for around 2 years around New Zealand, from as far south as Invercargill to as far north as Whangarei. She joins us today to discuss the pros and pitfalls of being a locum doctor. Thank you very much for joining me today, Lillian. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you so much. So I'd love to hear from the beginning, I guess, what drew you to medicine?
Well, when I was growing up, I had a sister who was chronically ill. And being in a family where you've got family members always ill, going to hospital, I think you've got a first-hand experience of how having contact with healthcare professionals. And I think just going through that process growing up, it just inspires me to provide care towards patients and wanting to help other people in the future.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And what's brought you all the way from Malaysia to New Zealand? I know I'm in the same boat because I'm also Malaysian Chinese, but how did you end up here?
That's an interesting question, actually. I actually got a scholarship to come study in New Zealand. And at the time, I was actually preparing to move to Australia to study medicine instead, under my parents, obviously. But because I accepted the scholarship, I came to New Zealand instead and let go of my dream of going to Australia.
Oh, wow. So you ended up with a scholarship to come to New Zealand, which is a big deal from Malaysia.
Yeah. At the time, the scholarships were pretty sought after, and I was really lucky to be one of the recipients at the time.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And then you found yourself in medicine and in medical school, and you meandered your way through being a med reg and an anesthetics reg. What landed you on rural medicine? Are you just rural medicine training or GP and yes. rural med or yeah?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm just doing my rural hospital medicine training. But next year, I'll be adding on GP training as well, just to give me more flexibility for the future if I wanted to go full-time or part-time locuming again as a consultant.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's going to give you such a wide breadth of what you could do. You could basically do anything in the hospital and anything in GP land.
Yes, it does provide a lot of flexibility. And I think at the moment, New Zealand really needs more doctors in rural medicine and GP land. And I think volunteering to go down that path is actually helping to provide to the need of the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to hear what drew you to locuming in the first place.
I was going through a routine of showing up to work, training, and at some point of time, I just felt slightly burned out. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take some time off. And most of the time, when you take a time off, it's usually annual leave, and it's never longer than a few weeks. And I think that drew me to locuming because I could officially take time out of full-time work, go locuming, still work, gain more experience, and you've got that flexibility of your roster of how much you want to work, what sort of shifts you want to choose to work, where you want to work, with who you want to work with. So I think that drew me to locuming, and it gave me time to breathe in the midst of different shifts, and it just provides so much more flexibility and having your own time to take time off as well.
Yeah, absolutely. How many years in were you when you decided to step out into locuming? And do you think there's an ideal year, or is there a year that's better than another year?
I was about PGY 7 or 8 when I decided to step into locuming. And I personally think there's no ideal time, but I think it's better to go into locuming once you've had a couple of years of experience as a doctor, hopefully PG after PGY 2 or 3, just because you've got to learn on the job, you've got some experience, you know what to do, you're used to being a doctor for a couple of years. I think that will be very helpful when you go locum.
I just wanted to add on is because a lot of locuming, you have to adjust to the new environment really quickly. So it's really helpful to know your job like the back of your hand, because in the time you're just thrown into the hospital, there's no orientation. It's just start your day. Here you go. Here's your login. Half the time your login doesn't work and that's it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I completely resonate with you in the advice in starting after PGY 2 or 3, just to make sure you're comfortable at least doing the basic things as a house officer.
Exactly.
So you started in PGY 7 and 8. And so you had clearly quite a lot of experience under your belt. And had you been a registrar for a while by then? You had done your med reg and anesthetic stints.
So after PGY 2, I stepped up to be a medical registrar for a year or two. And then I applied for training in anesthetics. And I did anesthetics for up to 4 to 5 years, including some time in ICU before going into locuming. So I was really used to working full time, doing the shifts that I'm rostered on. And I think at some point, I just felt like I was just like a hamster in the hamster wheel, just going through the motions. And I think I lost my goal. Like I lost why I wanted to do in medicine in the first place. And I thought, actually, taking time out is a way to actually find your passion again and reignite that fire and to rediscover yourself and find out for yourself again why you went into medicine in the first place.
And then I guess the next step into after deciding to step away and resign, which is a big step in itself, you have to figure out all the loopholes of agencies and how you even get started. So tell me, what was your experience in picking an agency and why did you pick one over the other, for example?
So I've dealt with two agencies in the past, and one agency in particular was very quick in their correspondence, and they were really helpful at the same time as well. You could pick up the phone, you could email them anytime, and that they would respond to you within 5-10 minutes. And I think that was really helpful because I could pick a job that I want to do, apply for it, and they would quickly contact me and then contact the hospital and get me the job. Whereas with the other agency that I dealt with, they were a little bit slower and I ended up losing a couple of jobs. So by the time they got back to the hospital and got back to me, they would say, oh, sorry, someone else took the job. And that another doctor from another agency took the job. So I think having an agent that is really onto it, that's really helpful, is key to working as a locum.
Absolutely. It makes such a huge difference, the agent that you're with as well, because you can be assigned different agents within an agent. So it's so dependent on your agent as to what experience you get of that agency. When you were signing up with an agency, did you ever consider going out on your own? Because I know some people just end up signing up as sort of contractors or casual employees of each hospital. Was that ever a consideration of yours, and why did you pick against it, or why did you do it?
I decided to always stick with an agency because I felt like I myself as a person can be easily swayed and may not necessarily be really good at standing up for myself. And having an agent is very helpful because they can negotiate with the hospital without you being there, without you needing to face the hospital yourself. So I guess having someone stand up for you, or if you were to have any needs in particular to be voiced out and you didn't feel comfortable doing that, the agent is there to do that for you. And if you were wanting to negotiate your salary, for example, it can be, to me, quite difficult. And I think that coming from a culture where talking about money can be a little bit taboo, I find it really helpful that the agent does that for me, and I could save my face from needing to face that situation.
Yeah, I totally understand that, because instead of being able to be like, oh, those shift times are really not that ideal for me, I'd really prefer to start at this time. It's really hard to say that to a boss's face because you have to be there in person. So to have someone else to tell them, oh, I'm just passing on that Lillian would prefer X, Y, and Z, at least you don't have to get involved in that conversation and they just relay it back to you. Is that your experience?
Exactly. And being the third person in that conversation rather than you negotiating it by yourself is so much more helpful. Yeah.
And I'm sure there are like people out there who have personalities who are able to deal with that and probably have a little bit of a spark from having those kind of conversations and negotiating. Because I certainly know some of my friends are geared that way. And that's totally fine. If that suits you, then they can probably be a casual employee and contractor. All right. So we've heard about some of the things to look out for in a good agent or a good agency. So the next thing is, how do you find out what jobs you want to do? What are the red flags of picking up specific jobs? Are there any that you've done that you're like, oh, I wish I could have seen that coming, that wasn't going to be a good job?
In my experience, I think in terms of picking a job, it's important to know that you can do the job well. You've got the experience behind that. You've got the experience under your belt. So for me, I applied for jobs like medical registrar or as an anesthetic registrar or as an ICU registrar, just because I've done that job personally in the past and going into the job that, you know, that, okay, I can actually do this and I can recall from my experience of what I would have done in certain situations. So I think knowing that you can do the job is important. And also in terms of picking where you want to work, I think it's really dependent on where you feel most comfortable, which part of the country, and if you've got any family ties. I guess if you have family in a certain part of the country, I think it's helpful to go locoming there, because if anything were to go wrong, you have someone locally to call on. And yeah.
So that's fair. Have you ever been caught out? Have you ever had a horror story or a bad experience where something's not quite gone for you?
Yeah, there was once where I went locuming in a hospital where it was during the pandemic and I needed to get a PCR done. And I would get my PCR done by my GP prior to going on a flight. But on arrival, I would have to turn up to the hospital to get the PCR done the next day. And the hospital was quite bad at corresponding. And I turned up, waited for a couple of hours until I got my PCR done. And then just a few hours before starting the job, I was told that I don't have a login. And there was just a lot of IT issues on the first day. And I was starting at 8 a.m. that in ICU, and that was a very tricky, because not having a login was not helpful to anyone. And as a local, I felt really embarrassed that it's almost like it's my fault that I was unprepared. But unfortunately, it's just the way how things were. And I think at that time, the hospital going through a lot of difficulty getting documentation and PCR tests done on time for locums prior to starting. So I think it's a pandemic issue as well, on top of just the lack of staffing at the hospital as well.
Like, IT slip-ups are quite common throughout the country. I feel like it's one of those things that's really easy to slip through the cracks, and it's always a gamble. It's a 50-50 whether you show up and your logins work or if anything's actually been teed up for you. But with locuming, I so understand that feeling of getting there, and if things aren't sorted, you feel like you're to blame, even though you've had nothing to do with the process, but you feel really bad because you can tell that you're being an inconvenience on everyone else in the team, but you can't do anything about it, and you call IT and you chase, but they don't really get it done any faster. How do you navigate, I guess, settling in as a locum? Because you're always a stranger. You're always having to like break barriers and do icebreakers in every team, every time you move, every hospital you go to. How do you go about it?
So usually on my first day, I would be open to share a little bit of myself, just to say where I've worked before, just because with staff like nurses and consultants or other registrars that you have to work with, they would be very grateful if you would tell them, well, actually, I've got experience in XYZ, and they will feel much more comfortable in trusting you and your good decisions, and also be open with just smiling and befriending anyone that comes your way, because you never know who will actually help you in your job. And especially the nurses, to be honest, because they make or break your job most of the time. And they are the most helpful people when you turn up to a new environment. And I have turned up to certain hospitals where I get to know the nurses, befriend them, and they would even bring meals for me or a cup of tea for me, even though I was just a local. So I think it's helpful to just be open to making friends, have a smiley face, and be happy to share experience.
That's fair. And in the times that you've moved, because you've clearly done quite a bit of locuming throughout the years, how have you dealt with any isolation, or have you brought family with you every time you've moved around?
So every time that I've moved around, I've actually been alone. And to combat isolation, I basically got to know people at the hospital where I worked with, and actually ended up making friends where I would actually end up catching up with them outside work. So I think being open to making new friends is so important as a locum. I think you have to put your judgment aside, your judgmental stance aside, and be willing to just make friends, because it can be very isolating as a locum, because you're always seeing new people and you don't have that social group that you do have when you're in a permanent hospital. And it's so easily when you're in a fixed hospital to just stick with your usual group of friends. And I think just breaking out of that as a locum, just be willing to make new friends and be willing to put yourself out there and say, hey, I would like to catch up with you outside work, or hey, can I join your gathering social activity that you guys are having? Because most of the time, either the house officers or the registrars would have some social gatherings, and just be willing to say, I would like to join them. I would like to get to know you guys.
Absolutely. And a lot of people are really open to that. Like, they know that you're usually locoming on your own, that other than being there for work, you mostly don't have anything else on in your schedule unless you're there for a specific reason. Some people go to specific places to surf or to ski or to. So I think a lot of people, especially the hospitality of Kiwis, are very happy to take you in as a locum. I know that sometimes people have said that there's a stigma to being a locum, or that like there's a hostility around locuming. Have you ever experienced that?
To be honest, not really. It's 90% has been really positive on my end. I guess the only stigma that locuming would have, some people, not everyone, the minority of doctors would think that, oh, you probably couldn't secure a permanent position in a hospital, and that's why you have to be a locum. And that's not true at all, because a lot of locums do have a full-time job or a part-time job in a hospital, and they're just going out as a locum to either earn extra money or to explore the country or to have that work-life balance. So I think most of the time, there's not much stigma around locuming, and it's quite well known that nowadays a lot of people are going into locuming to seek work-life balance. And actually, a lot of people would applaud me for actually taking the step to go locuming. So it has been 90% of the time positive.
It almost seems like a rite of passage nowadays, isn't it? Like every consultant and registrar I've spoken to have all seemed to have taken stints out to locum to have a bit of a life, to explore something with their family or their partners, and then come back to training and their regular jobs. So it certainly seems a lot more normalized than perhaps maybe what it used. But yeah, anecdotally, 100% of the locums I've seen so far either have full-time jobs or have jobs lined up for the future. And they're just doing this as a little stint for a holiday, and then they're going back to training for X, Y, and Z reasons. Yeah, I definitely resonate with your experience there. I'm going to ask some really basic questions, which I know both you and I know the answers to, but I know other people will want the answers to this, which is, who arranges your travel, your accommodation? How do you get the logistics and X, Y, and Z and the IT stuff sorted every time you locum?
So in terms of traveling, the agency would organize that, including accommodation. But when it comes to IT logins and logistics around the hospital, it's usually the R unit that organizes that. And it's actually really dependent on that hospital's RMO unit. If they are really organized, things would go very smoothly for you on your first day. But if the RMO unit is not the most organized, your first day may be a bit challenging, and be willing to accept that sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just willing to roll with the punches if it's not
and
sorted.
Look around.
Yeah. And who organizes your indemnity? Do you pay for your own indemnity?
Yes, so I do pay for my own indemnity insurance, and it's as a locum, it's important to have a valid indemnity insurance. And also you have to pay for your own registration with the medical council as well, and also paying for your own equipment if you were to bring it along with you during locuming.
This is a really interesting topic to be on, because equipment is a different payment plan. And so is registration when you're working as a locum, because now you're a contractor. So I don't know if you're comfortable talking about this, but if you are, I'd love to hear you chat about how finances work as a locum, because there's tax deductible expenses and there's GST and all sorts of funny things. So tell us what you've done in terms of organizing the financial mess of being a contractor.
I actually got myself an accountant to help me with my GST returns and my tax with IRD. And also with my accountant, he was actually really helpful in actually reducing my tax by just giving him receipts of my meals if I was working at that time, receipts on equipment, or even transport, receipts of transport that you require at the time where you're working. And they're actually all tax deductible. So actually working as a contractor is really ideal, because the little things that you think that may not be tax deductible are actually tax deductible, and it's important to check it out with your accountant. Wherever you are going during your locum stints, just keep track of all your receipts, because with the agency, they do provide accommodation and travel, but they don't provide for your meals. And oftentimes you don't get a free lunch like the other registrars. So the meals that you provide for yourself during work hours are actually tax deductible, and your accountant should be able to sort that out for you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like such a life hack with contracting, because it's certainly not anything we ever navigate as an RMO. So it was certainly very new territory for me. Was there something that was a tax deductible expense that surprised you? For me, it was work equipment. I didn't realize if you bought a new stethoscope or if you bought a new laptop that you use for work, like those are all counted as tax deductible expenses. And to me, it sounded all very fishy at first, because I was like, oh my gosh, am I like evading tax? But it was all legit, because I also have an accountant who was like, yep, this is all legal. This is all proper tax deductible expenses. How about you? What kind of things surprised you?
I think I bought a couple of books and went on a course, like a really short course, and they were all tax deductible. And I was surprised, because usually as a permanent employee, yes, if you're a trainee of a certain specialty, you get your books and the courses rebated. And yeah, and if it was outside of what they would rebate, you wouldn't get your money back. But as a contractor, so much, actually, the government takes care of you so much more. And I think that's one of the perks of being a locum.
Absolutely. Tell us about GST registration. What does this mean?
So as a contractor, you need to be registered with the IRD to get to be a GST registered contractor. And every time you locum, you actually get paid an extra amount called GST. And this needs to be returned back to the IRD at the end of each financial year. And you can choose to return it, I think, every 6 months or once a year. And you can just use an accountant to actually help you with that. Because I think at the start, when I started locuming, I thought, man, suddenly I'm getting extra money for not no extra work. But actually, that's not extra money to be in the bank account. It needs to be returned back to the government. So I think having a separate bank account to just keep the GST aside and then to get your accountant to return it, to lodge a return, is actually really helpful so you don't spend that amount of money.
Yeah, yeah. And people do get caught out with that, because if you're not somebody who's good at putting aside the money that actually doesn't belong to you, you can get caught out every time you file your GST returns that you're thousands in deficit because you spent it. And GST registration, I think, to my understanding, is if you earn more than $60,000 per annum from your income as a contractor, then you have to register for GST. But if you earn under that amount, so say you're a full-time employee, but you're locuming a bit extra on your weekends here and there, then you're probably going to be under the $60,000 bracket. So you probably don't need to register for GST. Is that your understanding as well?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Because I was pretty much full-time locuming, most of my income would be GST, which would include GST. So I needed to return it.
And when you were thinking about your accountancy and you found your accountant, how did you find your accountant? And did you ever consider any of those accountancy programs like Xero and Henry, which a lot of people are on?
My accountant is actually a friend of mine who I got to know in university. And because he's a personal friend, it was really helpful because he would actually look out for me and would be looking out for my best interest in terms of filing taxation, and if there was anything that could be rebatable, he would actually ask me for receipts on them. I would actually advise future locomers out there to actually get actually physical accountant to sort out your tax, because it's so much helpful to work with a person rather than an app on a computer, or just because you can go back and forth and ask about certain things and just navigate your taxation.
Yeah, I guess I'm always worried that I'm not going to file my taxes right. And that's something that it could be like a criminal offense. If you get to the end of the year and IRD finds out that you've not been paying your taxes correctly, it might seem like tax evasion. And I don't know if I'm maybe being too conservative or maybe hyping up how persecutory or how punishing the IRD are. But I think that's always a fear that I've held. And so I've also gotten an accountant, but I know people who do manage it off Xero and Henry. I'm just always fearful that I'll mess it up in some way with my taxes. It seems like a serious thing.
Yeah, I agree with your sentiment, actually, because with all these apps that you use, if you don't have a background in accountancy or even experience in the past, I think it's actually way more helpful to work with an accountant. Just like you said, you don't want to mess it up. You don't want to be in trouble for something that you didn't even know about. So I think just safeguard yourself as a doctor. It's important for your future, I think, to pay your taxes correctly and on time.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably some people who do have accountants for an X period of time might be able to transition into these apps, or maybe some people are just really savvy and can use these programs straight off the bat. But for anybody who is interested, I think the two dominant platforms that I've heard of is Xero and Henry, and they're supposed to bypass the use of an accountant because you can manage all of it yourself. My other curious question is what you do in terms of your superannuation and KiwiSaver, because these are things that are not employer matched once we are not employees. So we no longer get the 6% match. And so therefore there's no contributions, automatic contributions into your KiwiSaver. In your situation, what do you do in terms of retirement savings?
Unfortunately, with the times when I've been locuming, I haven't been very disciplined and putting aside money to put in my KiwiSaver. So for 1 year, I didn't manage to put any money or any contributions in KiwiSaver. And actually, I didn't even realize that, to be honest. I was just looking at my paycheck and just putting that into the bank and not realizing that actually with my previous permanent jobs, your your employer has been contributing to your KiwiSaver. So I would advise localers to actually actively put money aside for KiwiSaver on top of what you've been paid, because it's something that you could easily accidentally forget about. And if you have known for multiple years, you would then realize that actually I haven't contributed for multiple years. And I think a lot of people also do realize that with KiwiSaver, there's compounding interest. So it's actually really important to put money aside for your retirement every single month or year.
I agree. And it's something that's so easy to slip up on because we've never had to actively do it as RMOs. And so you forget that something that you need to change in terms of your financial habits coming out as a contractor. I'm curious to know what you think are some of the pitfalls of being a contractor. Because for me, I realized that losing sick leave and annual leave and any kind of those kind of leaves was one of the pitfalls. If you get sick with COVID or you get sick with anything else, you just don't get paid for the work that you were meant to do. How about you? What did you find were some of the pitfalls of locuming?
Very similar to yours. I guess you lose that sense of comfort where as a permanent employee, if you were sick, you still get paid. But as a locum, you don't. But in some ways, that is why locums get paid on a higher rate to cover for unexpected leaves. But other than that, a pitfall I would think would be actually not having a support system as a locum. So you wouldn't necessarily have a supervisor of training or a mentor while you are a locum, and you're always meeting new people, which in some ways can be good to help you to help put yourself out there, but can be bad because if you're an introvert, it may drain you quite a bit having to get to know people all the time and having to navigate around new hospital environment quickly. I think it's a skill that you have to build on. And I think it's very helpful if someone wants to go locuming to be flexible generally in being comfortable in a new environment all the time.
You've touched on really briefly the idea of mentorship and supervision, and it's something that's common to all of us as contractors, because for me, I had to step out of training to be a locum. What was your situation? Did you have to leave your training program or interrupt it? And what did you use in the meantime for MCNZ? Because they always require us to be supervised in some capacity.
At the time, I actually have already stepped out of training, and as part of the requirements for the medical council, you need to have a supervisor under BPAC. So I had to enroll myself under BPAC and have a supervisor who would catch up with you on 3 times a year, to basically just talk about how you're coping at work. And as part of BPAC, you have to do a program called In Practice. And that's where you have to log in the things that you've learned, the articles or the research papers that you've read. So you're actually still considered upskilling and keeping up with the new things in medicine and not slipping behind in terms of learning. So yes, so I think in a way, medical council has been pretty good making sure that whoever who's not training is in a program where they're continually learning, having continued medical education.
When you had to look for the supervisors for your in-practice, were there specific people that you had to choose, and how did you pick your supervisors for it?
So at the time, I chose someone whom I've known really well in anesthetics and when I was a trainee. And before I actually stepped out of training, I actually spoke to her and asked her if she would be willing to be my supervisor under BPAC, which I'm really lucky to have her. So I seek that out pretty early, even before leaving training, because I read up about what the requirements are under medical council. So I think as an advice to future doctors who want to go down the track of locuming and actually leaving a training position, it's important for you to think ahead of time who you want to have as a supervisor while you're...
So it sounds like you were on the anesthetics training program, and then you left anesthetics, did some locuming, and joined the rural medicine training program. What made you leave anesthetics? There must have been a lot of decision-making and weighing up the pros and cons for you to leave. What were those pros and cons for you?
I think at one point in time, I was feeling quite burnt out because I haven't been taking a lot of during training. And also at one point of time, I was questioning myself if anesthetics was actually really suitable for me and my personality. There are things about anesthetics but there were certain aspects of it which didn't feed my soul. And at the time, I had a really supportive supervisor of training. And frequently, we would sit down and talk about, not about training, talk about life and what I would like out of life. And I think looking at the big picture, she helped me realize what would feed me as a person and what would help me going forward. So it wasn't just a supervisor who supervised me during anesthetics training. She was way more than that. She was almost like a mentor who taught me about life and doctoring, and that doctoring is not the only aspect in life. I think with that, I decided to initially interrupt my training, went on holiday, and then did a few patches of locum shifts, but I was still part-time at the hospital at the time. And during that time, I felt like, hey, locuming is so much fun, and it opens up a door of opportunity for me to actually figure out my life and dip my toes in other specialties before committing to it. So after doing that, then I decided actually now I don't want to be interrupted training anymore. I want to formally leave training, which was at the time was partially sad for certain people in the department and for myself, but I guess I was more sad at that time about the uncertainty of it all, and I was having a lot of insecurities of going into the unknown. But looking back, actually, it has grown me a lot, and it has given me a lot of courage to actually seek out what you want in life. And even though a specialty may be popular among a lot of registrars, it's not necessarily always a good fit for a person. So don't go with the popular opinion, but instead tailor everything to your personality and what you want out of life.
Can you tell us a little bit about the push-pull factors for you? Because you knew that there were some things attractive about it, but there were really some things that, like you said, really didn't speak to your soul, didn't feed you and nourish you. What were those aspects specifically?
So a part of me that I really like is patient interaction. Even though it may be exhausting for some people, I actually feed off it. Like just talking to patients and knowing how they feel, and when you've managed them or given them a treatment, you can go back and have a chat with them again and see what the response is. And having good feedback from patients really feed my soul. Just having them say, thank you so much for that medication you gave me. It helped with my condition or situation. It just feeds into my soul as a doctor. And I feel like in anesthetics, you don't necessarily get that because a lot of the time patients in snippets of the time where they're awake, and there are times where they unfortunately forget about you because they would think that going into surgery, it's all about the surgeon. And when they come out of surgery, they would see the surgical team. And often they forget about the anesthetist. It's a little bit sad in that aspect. And on top of that, I think as a rural hospital trainee, working in rural environments, you get to know patients as well, the frequent returners. And because the town is quite small, you get to know your patients pretty well. And the nurses would let you know about their social situation. So sometimes you don't really even have to take a social history because someone would know someone. And that's actually really helpful in terms of managing a patient and knowing what they want out of coming into hospital. Going back into learning general medicine, pediatrics, and adult medicine, it puts me back into a clinical medicine frame of mind, which I think I lost when I was in anesthetics, because it's actually quite a different specialty. Anesthetics, I feel, is quite different to a lot of specialties in medicine. Yeah.
Mm. Was it locuming in particular that actually highlighted the option of rural medicine for you? Or had you always had an inkling that rural medicine was a place you wanted to end up?
To be honest, I didn't even realize that rural medicine was a thing. Just because you don't get a lot of time in rural medicine as a student or as a junior doctor. So it was during locum that I got to work in rural areas and realized that, hey, there's actually this training program that really flexible in terms of their training, and also a program where you learn a lot of, it's a generalist program. You learn a lot of aspects of medicine. So you dip your toes in a lot of different specialties, and being able to manage patients initially and sending them off to a bigger hospital if they require to. Just having that generalist training was something that I realized. Actually, that's something that I really liked about it, knowing a little bit of everything.
I'm curious as well as to which part of Malaysia you came from and whether that was rural at all.
So in my early childhood, I grew up in Ipoh, which was a town. I wouldn't say it's a small town, but it's a town. And my parents grew up in a rural area around Ipoh. So I would frequently go visit my grandparents in rural areas. And I guess when I was young, I really enjoyed the close-knit community in rural areas. And I think just having that since childhood really played a role in shaping who I am. Because I really appreciate having a close-knit community and having a social circle in my life, which I think in some ways I've lost it a little bit after when I'm to Penang because of my dad's job. And it's different. I think it really boils down to your personality of what you like. Are you a city person, small town person?
Yeah, but you're absolutely right in that we don't get any much exposure, especially in Otago Medical School. I feel like a lot of our rural exposure was if you were an RMIP student, which was also a program that was rolled out quite recently. So it's not been there for decades and decades. Other than that, we had a few rural placements, but it was always rural placements in context of like general medicine or pediatrics. And there were people who were trained in that, or rural GP, but not really rural hospitalists. And I think maybe that's evolved over the last few years, because I think I can see some Auckland and Otago medical students coming through who are placed as rural hospitals. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's changing, but you're right. It's still not something we have that much exposure to. It's certainly something I'm seeing a lot more of as a locum, but never got any exposure to as an RMO.
Yeah. Interestingly, the rural hospital program is only 10 years old. So it's a very new, and it's under the umbrella of the GP college, but it's actually a separate division on its own. So it's not technically a GP training, but they do recognize themselves as under the umbrella of the GP college. So I think the fact that it's quite new would lean to why we haven't heard of it much, especially when I was a med student, because I was a med student more than 10 years ago. Yeah. And I guess they don't get a lot of exposure as well as a college. And I think in the past, rural hospitals were serviced by GPs. So these GPs would have extended training. So on top of doing their GP training, they had to do extra papers or extra training in different specialties.
Like obstetrics or anesthetics. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like in Australia, they've got a college in rural and remote medicine, which is very similar to the rural college here. But I think they've got way more experience under their belt, and they've way more trainees over the previous years. Yeah, so they're much more set up in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. What Lillian's referring to here is ACRM, which is the Australian Rural Medicine Program. And They have been much more well established, but I think the exit exams for rural medicine here are modeled on the ACRM exams anyway. So the standard of trainees coming out are exactly the same, but I don't think they gain the same recognition as my understanding, as in New Zealand rural medicine trainees are not recognized as rural hospitalists in Australia. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes, that's right. I think it's because our rural hospitals are never too far away from a secondary or tertiary hospital. So I think you don't necessarily need that extent of training. Whereas in Australia, you can be multiple hours away and you could be in the middle of nowhere. So you need way more extended training to be able to practice in a rural area in Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like very subspecialized. Like there are rural hospitalists who do just scopes or like obstetrics or anesthetics, or yeah, it's like they literally have their own subspecialties within rural medicine, is my understanding.
Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right.
Lillian, I know you've kindly taken your time out of your sleep days as part of your night shifts tonight that you're going into to do this podcast. So I really want to let you go and have your dinner and get some rest before your night shift starts tonight. So thank you so much for joining me. It's been so useful to hear your perspective on locuming, your pearls, your pitfalls, things you wish you knew, and even a little bit about your training, to hear a little bit about how you got there and why you ended up where you are at the moment. So thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for sharing.
You're much welcome. And I really hope what I've said today is helpful for people who are considering locuming in the future.
This podcast was made possible by the New Zealand Doctors Residents Association Education Trust. Thank you for listening. Mā te wā.